welcome to the Dynamics of Everyday Life, where we demystify some tricky concepts and get to know ourselves a little bit better. Welcome back to the Dynamics of Everyday Life. Today I'm excited to be interviewing my very first guest on the podcast, Tom Parkin. Tom had a great career in the city until he found himself unexpectedly made redundant at the age of 51. Being made redundant at any age is no fun, but there seems to be an unwritten rule in our society today that once you're over 50, people become less employable. I've given the matter a lot of thought since speaking to Tom and to delving into his situation. People over 50 clearly still have a lot to offer in life, both in our work and our personal lives. Whilst Judi Dench is never going to be offered the lead in a 20-something rom-com, you could arguably say that now she's going to be given the much more interesting and meaty roles. I'm wondering whether what is happening is that once we reach 50, we start to be on the receiving end of other people's projected fears. Aging's a scary process for us. We start to realise that perhaps we aren't immortal. Our bodies develop aches and pains, and potentially worse. So what do we do when we're faced with things that we don't want to think about? We repress them into our unconscious and start to defend against them, and ageism is one such defence. We're worried about what will happen to us when we get older, but instead of having that unbearable thought in our conscious minds, we project it onto other people and decide that they aren't capable. And, at its most extreme end, we actually don't want them around us because we're reminded of what's coming to us all. It's not all doom and gloom, though. Tom's story shows us that life really doesn't end at 50, and he has some helpful tips for you if you find yourself in that situation. So sit back and enjoy. Tom and I met over the school playground, basically, when our children were in the same class at preschool and at junior school. But we've now moved past the days of comparing homework notes, and we are generally very good friends. So I'm delighted, Tom, to welcome you. He has been through a difficult time, so I think there's a lot we can learn from what Tom's been through. Welcome, Tom. Let us know a bit about yourself.
Thanks. Hi, Julia. I'm honoured. It's a first, being your first guest, certainly my first ever podcast, not the sort of thing I normally get invited to do, but thank you. Yeah, look, I mean, saying I had a difficult time, that probably maybe over exit, but we all have our situations. But yeah, look, I mean, Julia kind of knows my history. I mean, a quick one about me, I guess it's kind of going to be about my career a lot of this conversation. So I left school after A levels, so that was, you know, show my age, but that was late 80s, early 90s. It was a time when financial services were booming. I guess you would call it the Thatcher years. There were lots of opportunities in the city. And leaving school, that was always what I wanted to do. A lot of my friends weren't going to university, not because they weren't capable. It was just there were opportunities at that time that you could get from being an A-level leaver, which definitely, you know, I wouldn't have had the opportunity to go for now. So I went into banking fairly early, with a trading company, commodity trading company, and it was, you know, it was grassroots stuff. It was right from the bottom. You know, started doing settlements in what they call the back office. My brother is a couple of years older than me. He was involved in the foreign exchange market, so kind of similar route to career. And I guess just from a little bit of work and a lot of badgering people, I got some opportunities, got the opportunity to move into a dealing room and then eventually to start trading. And I guess that took me into my mid-20s. And from there, I was lucky enough to spend the next 25 years moving from one institution to another, generally bigger and bigger, culminating in the last 10 years of my career, working for one of the biggest banks in the world at a pretty senior position. All going well, you know, the years fly by. You know, I knew I was in a crazy industry where there was no job security. Always thought I'd be, you know, ready for the craziness. But I guess because the last few years of my career were going so well for me personally and for the bank that I was at, it was, to say the least, a shock that I got a tap on the shoulder one day, called up to HR and suddenly made redundant. And I guess that's what's kind of led me to sitting here in front of you.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you for sharing all that for us. Was it a surprise when you were made redundant?
It was. It's like I say, I probably could and would have expected it at numerous other times through my career. I mean, ironically, I think it did happen to me probably in my early 30s, but it was because the bank I was at was pulling out of the business. They kind of made the whole team redundant, and I was fairly quickly into another role after that. But no, I guess it was the timing. As I say, I thought that I would always see it coming when or if it did, but it didn't. You know, I was at a senior enough position that I knew when redundancies or rounds of redundancies were coming. I'd had to make people redundant myself, so I always thought that I'd know. Knew that this particular week was a redundancy week, and knew some other people that were going to be losing their jobs, unfortunately. But yeah, got completely blindsided by the call. It was literally one of those phone calls from my boss. Hi, Tom, can you come up to the 20-something floor? Thought that's a little bit strange. I'm kind of busy today. Walked in, saw my boss sitting there with an HR representative sitting next to him. And I mean, I actually think my first reaction, I think I laughed. It was just one of those ridiculous situations where it was so crazy and so unexpected and so ridiculous that I think I just laughed and shook my head. And it's as brutal as you hear these things. You know, they read from the script, went through all the details, and then literally escorted me off the premises, went and got my jacket, never even went back to my desk, never saw my colleagues again. I say never, not at the time. And was handed my coat and car keys and walked out onto the pavement. So yeah, to say it was a shock. Absolutely, yeah.
Without wishing to add a spoiler here, neither is a 21 anymore. What were your main fears around this?
It certainly took me for a long time to think about whether I was worried about it, think about concerns. Look, I mean, you're right. Yeah. So I was, let's be brutal. What was I? 50, 51 years old at the time. So, you know, on reflection, for a trader, that's getting on a bit. But I was kind of, you know, middle management as well. So, you know, it wasn't like I was just, you know, trading some junior books. But that said, for a trader, that's a pretty good innings. But no, I'd say the first reactions. I mean, obviously, you kind of immediately want to call someone. I think, I remember back. I think I called my wife, and she wasn't picking up. Probably for me, she was on tennis court. Then I think I phoned my brother, who was kind of, you know, as I say, was in the industry. And so yes, I look, had some supportive words during my journey home. And then I think the first few days were more anger than concern. I think because I felt like because there was no strong business rationale for being made redundant, and say it was yeah, there were some underperformers that we'd removed. Without playing my own trumpet too much, I certainly wasn't underperforming, and it made no real sense. So it felt a little bit too personal. Felt like my boss just kind of wanted to get away with the level of middle management, and maybe, you know, on reflection, there could be some rationale for that, but at the time, yeah, I felt it was personal, it was unnecessary, and so yeah, I'd say, you know, kind of bitterness and anger and resentment were the overriding feelings, certainly for the first probably few weeks. But yeah, when you get through that, there was lots of very nice messages. I had lots of people contacting me, saying that they couldn't believe it as well, and obviously lots of people calling me probably from the industry that had heard, you know, saying, well, look, of course you'll just walk into another job. And you know, maybe I believed that at the time, but then, you know, I started to really realize that you know, ageism is an absolute real thing, and I'm sure we'll probably get onto that, probably in every industry, but certainly in mine, in the job that I was in, it certainly wasn't going to be easy for me to get back if I'd wanted to. And again, you know, we can talk about that. I was probably unsure on exactly what I wanted to do at the time anyway. Yeah, I wouldn't say I was worried, concerned at the time. Maybe that was a little bit unrealistic.
And you mentioned ageism. Let's not beat around the bush. Once you're over 50, it does play a part. How much did this play a part for you?
I mean, completely. I mean, I certainly discovered that in the in the years going forward. You know, that was, now we're talking about 5 years ago, and I don't know whether 50 is a magic number, but it kind of felt like it. It did feel to me like people, when I applied for new positions, of course, you know, HR departments, you know, can never officially consider that. I think they're probably not even meant to ask your age when you apply for things, but you know, it becomes pretty evident pretty quickly. You know, part of me gets it. You know, in the years that have gone by and the people I've spoken to and the interviews that I've sat in, it was only one person that, and I'm sure, you know, he would have been very much off the record for saying it, but I appreciate it, who was brutally honest with what his thinking was. And he didn't refer to age. It was more about, you know, about that whole thing, which I'm sure anyone that might listen to this that could relate to, and that's that thing where people go, well, you're overqualified, you're too senior, you're too good, for use of another word. But the way he put it, he said, look, you know, you could do this job standing on your head, and I'd be delighted to have you. I'd absolutely love to have you. But they said, my fear, and again, he was very much off the record with this, is that in a fairly short amount of time, you'd get bored with it and you'd see another shiny thing that's more interesting and maybe higher paid and better, and you'd leave. And I'd be right back in the same situation that I am now. And I get that, you know, and that's generally not said and can definitely not be officially said, but I can understand, you know, hiring managers thinking like that. How you get around that, I don't know. You know, it's, you know, changing perception. You know, as a hiring manager, you know, trusting your instincts that person genuinely does want to do that job and will be an attribute, and eventually, you know, you will find that company and that person, and I did in the end. Again, we can get onto that later. And when you do find it, and when, you know, hiring teams do take that leap of faith, it's definitely worth it for them.
The other thing is, as well, that plays into your situation is this happened pretty much as we were going into the pandemic, didn't it?
It did. So it was, what, late 2018, early 2019. Yeah, there's kind of a period of, anyone that's been made redundant knows this is a period of consultancy and then another period of gardening leave. So there was kind of a sort of 3-4 months almost transition between me leaving the office and me officially not working for them. But yeah, that took me into early 2019. And it was, you know, it was strange, you know. So I spent 2019, you know, doing what everyone tells you to do, which is take some time off, reflect. And that was absolutely right. I didn't want to jump into anything. Think about what you missed, think about what you want to do, talk to lots of people. And that was great. So I absolutely spent 6 months doing that through 2019. Then the second half of 19, I started having some really interesting conversations with people, and I just felt that I'd done everything right. I'd absolutely thought about the fact that I didn't want to go right back into what I was doing, whether I could have done or not. I did want to stay in the industry that I was in, but in a different way. And as I say, you know, I'd had some really interesting conversations with people, all looked like they were leading to job offers, or at least consultancy arrangements. And they were all just coming perfectly to a head at the end of 19 and it's 2020. And then that lovely situation of COVID hit. So everybody had a hiring freeze. Everybody thought that would be a few months. And then we'd all be back talking again. But as we all know, you know, that was a year or more of, you know, basically nobody hiring. So, yeah, it was... It made the whole situation, you know, even more unusual. COVID was unusual for everybody. So, yeah, strange. I mean, strangely, kind of reflecting back, I think like a lot of people, I look back with, you know, some degrees of fondness about COVID. It sounds ridiculous, but I think we all sort of reflect and find some, you know, amusement and pleasant periods. But the thing was that it put me in some ways in the same boat as everyone else, because it's not like I was missing, you know, going to work, seeing friends, doing stuff, because we were all stuck as we were home together. So it was a bit of a leveler and it was fine. You know, I was in a better position than most people, you know, with a nice house and a garden and family around. And so, look, I can't, I certainly can't feel sorry for myself during the COVID years. But yeah, it certainly did add another year, 18 months to my life, making me that much older, making me that much less horrible, maybe. So yeah, it certainly, delayed the return period.
And you've touched on your home life. How did the redundancy impact your home life?
You know what? I think I probably went through every emotion in every situation. I mean, let's go from positives first. In some ways, it was fantastic. As you know, when I was made redundant, I had one still in junior school, one in senior school. The junior school is a walk around the corner from us. I got to walk my daughter to school every day. I got to go to every sporting event for both of them. Saw them grow up completely. I mean, so that's fantastic. Who wouldn't love that? Got to spend, have complete freedom. I had a couple of friends that weren't working as well. Saw all those. So look, it was great. Not having the stress of work. But, there's always that niggle in the back of your head in, is this permanent? And I think that was always the confusion at home on, you're too young to retire. This isn't retirement. Yeah, let's get it in your head. And I sort of always thought that. But as time went on, maybe I didn't fully commit to going back to work as quickly maybe as I should have done. I'm kind of, I guess, skirting around an elephant in the room to say that I wasn't under any immediate financial pressures to go to work. So that certainly took that degree of stress away that I am grateful for and that most people in that situation would have. But in some ways, because I didn't have that immediate pressure, it just maybe delayed me, maybe made me a little bit lazy on getting back to work. And yeah, of course, the other dynamic is with my wife. Again, fantastic sometimes, lovely to spend time together. But as the months and the years go on and you come out of COVID where we've all been locked down together, everybody needs their space. And again, maybe I was slow to appreciate that. Eventually, we both started understanding each other maybe a little bit better. So in the end, I was sort of sympathetic to go, well, I've got a wife, as a few years younger than me, but still, at that point in her life where we've got teenage girls, they're growing up, they're getting less dependent. We all start looking at ourselves thinking, what's my role in life? What am I here for? What comes next? And yeah, there's a degree, I'm sure, of me taking away, some terrible word, but duties, but some roles that my wife had in running the family and the girls. And that maybe diminished her role. So that made it difficult for her to know her place. And, I slightly lost track of what I wanted to do. Did I want to work? But eventually, she was sympathetic with me to say that I didn't just want to go back and just do any job, just to leave the house, just to go and do something, because I think she realized that would have driven me a little bit mad. But again, I did realize that I had to try a little bit harder to find a bit more structure in our lives. So in some ways that was good that we eventually it's like, right, okay, this is firm. This is not retirement. I am going to go back to work. Okay. And it was when I actually finally firmly, and we've spoken about this, I remember during that time, finally decided, yes, going back to work. In some ways, then it got difficult, because then I got more frustrated because I was finding it hard to get back to work. And that kind of took me into where we're now back here. That was sort of through 2022. I did some consulting during 22 for about 6 months. And that was good. That kind of got me back engaged with people, learning some new stuff. It was with an artificial intelligence software company, something I knew nothing about. So it was really interesting to learn some more about that. That was a 6-month contract, came to an end, didn't mind it coming to an end. It wasn't really what I was after, because that was 100% working from home, completely remotely on my own. It wasn't ultimately what I wanted. I knew that I wanted to get back to full-time, permanent employment, working with a team, working with other people. And yeah, that proved not as easy as I hoped to find.
What inspired you to keep going during this time?
Fear of my wife throttling me in the night, I think possibly was my one. But no, I think I found it easier because there was generally always something that I was working on job-wise. As everyone knows, you know, these things, they don't happen and come to a conclusion one way or the other overnight. You know, they take weeks or even months of interviewing and applying and talking and decision making. And yeah, there were some frustrating situations where I found jobs that I was really keen on, and maybe it was me, but I just felt I was super unlucky with a couple of opportunities. One got all the way to speaking to the CEO, and at the last minute he wanted to completely change the direction of the company, nothing about me. Another one was literally, I think I was probably a few days from getting an offer letter, and another candidate came in right at the last minute that had just a little bit more experience. You know, and you take those two things one after the other, that probably took up 4 or 5 months of the year working on those two things. You know, in hindsight, maybe I shouldn't have been relying on those and should have run more opportunities concurrently. But as I say, they were looking so firm that I kind of took my eye off any other opportunities. So in a way that, yeah, that was frustrating, but it actually helped, because just as I got disappointed with one not coming, another opportunity came up to get my attention. So yeah, look, there was some hard times. That was probably the toughest year of the 4.5 that I ended up being out of work, just because of that, as I say, that decision that I definitely wanted to get back to work, and the frustration of not finding an opportunity.
It sounds quite exhausting as well, that kind of like, yeah, you get excited about something, this could be it, and then your hopes being dashed again.
Yeah, it was. I mean, no, you know what, but I've never kind of been averse to that sort of slight, you know, work-based emotional rollercoaster. So I guess that was my job for 25 years. I thought it had a pretty pressurized, emotional, if you want to call it emotional, situation. So, you know, pressure, downtime, uptime, excitement, you know, that was kind of what I liked. And I think my wife would know there were times in my old job when I would come home and I would be as grumpy as hell, and she would think I'd had a terrible day. But actually, it was that was kind of what got me fired up, was being annoyed at situations or excited about situations and grumpy about things, just because I cared, you know. And you know, I've never wanted to do a job that I didn't care about. And the more I care, the more engaged with it and invested in it that I got. Yeah, maybe I brought that home occasionally, but you know, I think that's inevitable. So no, that as you say, you know, exhaustion of the interview process. Yeah, I didn't think it was fun at the time, but it was fine. You know, it was better than sitting around, you know, staring at job availabilities on screen and having nothing going on. So I'd rather that than nothing.
A bit of traction. It's like being in traffic, isn't it? You feel better if you're moving, even if you're going 20 times around a square, than sat in stationary traffic.
Perfect, yeah, perfect analogy. Absolutely agree, yeah.
So when it did become obvious that you were about to get another job, how did you start to feel then?
Well, I guess there was a big part of me going, I've been here before. You know, even when I've had, you know, I got to the situation where HR are basically telling me, yeah, this is all fine. You just, you know, and I think they even got to, which I would just need you to see one more person, but it's just a rubber stamp. I thought, there's me thinking, I've been here twice before with the rubber stamp situation. So I moderated expectation, but it was a job that I wanted. It was working, as I say, going back to what I always wanted. It was in the industry that I'd spent my whole career, but not trading, not working for a bank. The opportunity to utilize all the experience that I'd built up over 25, 30 years in a different way. So I was, you know, super keen on it. And yeah, look, when it actually happened, it was very pleasing. Yes, it was a relief. I had no concerns about the job itself. Completely confident that I could do the job and looking forward to it. I think my only concern was, my God, how much am I going to miss my freedom? Am I going into this ridiculous grass being greener on the other side, and I'll miss my time of leisure? But no, look, it was all good. It was perfect as it turned out. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I've been in a new job for 7 months now, and as I said a little while ago, you know, the company that I interviewed with, when I interviewed with them, you know, and I've always felt like this with jobs that I've taken seriously that I've really wanted. I've always wanted to go in being completely honest. You know, of course, we all have to go through interviews and play nice and say some of the right things. But I was also very honest with them in the interview to say, look, if I come in, I am going to be opinionated. You know, I am going to want to stick my nose into lots of things that, of course, I'll do my day job. But I'm going to, you know, if I see things that I think I can improve or you know, add or help with, I'm going to tell you. And I said this in the interview, and they said, fantastic. That's just what we want. And as soon as they said that in the interview, I knew even more that this is a place that I wanted to work. So, you know, that's what I've done in the time I've been there. And again, you know, going back to them taking that leap of faith and that confidence of hiring someone of my age with my old seniority in nowhere near as senior a job, and that was fine with me, and they were okay with that. They have been so appreciative of what I've taken, and it's gone both ways. You know, I've appreciated the opportunity, and true to their word, they have been absolutely fine with me being involved in lots of extra things. I mean, in fact, they've even encouraged it. You know, everyone that I've gone in there and, you know, engaged with their senior management, every one of them has said, if you've got any bandwidth, can we have some of your experience? Can you look at this? Can you look at this? And that's exactly what I always wanted going back to work. It wasn't about, you know, the greatest title or the biggest paycheck, but I wanted to be busy, and I wanted to be involved with as many different things as I could. And they are super appreciative of that, man. Yeah, couldn't want for any more.
Fabulous. What are the plus points? I mean, you've mentioned quite a lot, but kind of like, what are the plus points are there for you being back in work now?
Well, of course, I mean, you know, another thing was, you know, that desire for structure in my life. There was, odd, you know, some of the time that I was out, you know, that concept of having structure. I mean, I've never been particularly philosophical, but, you know, you tend to look at yourself and say, you know, I seem to need a purpose in life. You know, you get to that, what's it all about? What am I here for? What? And then you go back, I don't really know what I'm here for. I just get up in the morning and go to work and, you know, get institutionalized and get a paycheck and come home and pat the dog. And yeah, I think, I don't know if it's a reflection on me or us as human beings, but there was a bit of that I did need, that I didn't have any structure in my own. My structure in my life was the school run both ways. And that's, you know, that wasn't enough for me. So I guess there was an admission, as I say, whether it's, you know, me or humanity, that I needed a bit of structure. When I left the workplace, this whole concept of working from home, you know, was unknown, was unheard of, certainly in my industry. Now, you know, when I started work, it was 2 days in the office and 3 days from home. You know, I went in a lot more than that because I just thought it was good to start off like that. And within a couple of months, they changed the rules at work where they insisted on 3 days in the office. And there was outrage in the office. You know, all these youngsters, that's all they'd known was this whole hybrid working model. And they thought it was terrible. But for me now, it's not how I actually would have wanted to work when I was in my 20s, because I think spending more time in the office and with people and learning how to interact with people is something you're never going to get sitting in your bedroom in front of a screen. But for me now, it's perfect. You know, I do feel like I have, you know, way more flexibility and freedom having that hybrid working and doing a couple of days at home where I can still, as I say, pop out and walk the dog or pop down to the tennis club in my lunch hour and have those things. So again, it's just the right balance to give me enough structure, but I still feel like I've got enough freedom as well.
So it's really working for you at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I'm I, So if I'm trying to think of bad downsides, and I really we can't look. I mean, of course, there were times being off with having that total freedom, and as I say, I've still got some friends that are not working, and when they're off out on the golf course or going for a walk or having a nice pub lunch, you know, look, do I miss that? Yeah, but look, I had 4.5 years of it, and there's plenty of time in my future where I can go back to that. But for now, there's no downsides, and yeah, the family are happy. The girls don't miss me doing the school run, which is a shame. But yeah. So yeah, everything seems to be settling down. No drawbacks at all.
I'm delighted. What tips would you have for anybody who finds themselves in a similar situation?
That's more your job, isn't it, Julia? I mean, I don't know if any tips I give would be right for everyone. Everybody tells you the same things in, you know, it's like, oh, apply for lots of things and, you know, don't give up and, you know, take positives from all the knockbacks. And look, yes, of course, you've got to listen to all those that sensible stuff. And I did. And anyone who's like me will go, yeah, okay, I've heard all that before, but you know, it kind of sucks anyway. I'd say for me, one of the best ways of going through it, and again, this is, you know, very commonly heard, but it's kind of the one that most worked for me, is talk to people about what you're thinking about applying for jobs or which jobs you're or the direction you're going, and talk to people in person out loud. And that's, and with all due respect to my family, not your family, because they're invested, okay, and you'll have loads of conversations with them, and they'll give you their advice, or your husband or wife, your advice, and that would be great. But there's nothing like, you know, if you're lucky enough to have friends, non-judgmental types, that you can just go and you can just talk, you can just say things. Because I just found sometimes when I was thinking, here's a silly analogy, and it was one that I said, you know, I thought, oh, you know what, I'll just go and be an Uber driver. And I went out for a dog walk with my friend, and I don't know what to do. And I just said, oh, you know what? I'll just go and be an Uber. And as soon as I said the words out loud, I just thought, and he looked at me, I went, yeah, I'm not doing that. But I genuinely had sort of thought about it. But it's when you express, that's one silly little example, but things like that, whether it be sensible ideas that you say them out loud and you go, actually, I really like the sound of that. Or silly ideas that when you say them out loud to someone and they raise an eyebrow, and you go, okay, we'll park that one. So any opportunity to get out, and if you can do that, and again, we've all heard it before, get out in the fresh air, do it outside, you know, over a pint, over a round of golf, do some sport, say things out loud. They were some of the best kind of, you know, personal discoveries, that sounds a bit grand, of things that I, you know, directions that I wanted to take, I think, were in those situations. So do a lot of that. I'd say when it comes down, and again, this might not be the best advice for everyone, to actually applying for jobs. I'd say when I got to the situation where I just knew I wanted a job, it's like, and there were bits of me that were going, I'll sort of do anything. I just want to get out and get talking to people and rediscover myself. Don't think that it's easier getting a less senior job, getting a more junior, simpler job, because it's not. In fact, for me, it was the flip side, you know, because for me, the more, you know, junior a position I went for, the less they believed me, the less that they believed that I really wanted to do it. Pitch yourself at, you know, be ambitious, you know, continue to be ambitious, because, you know, trust me, you're just as likely to get, you know, a job a step above the one that you left because you're experienced and you can do it, as much as you are 5 steps below the one that you left. And that's what I found. You know, I sometimes wasn't ambitious enough with the things that I was pushing for, and ended up having a much better shot and getting to the final stages of higher level jobs. So yeah, remain ambitious, and don't undersell yourself.
Anything else that kind of comes to mind for you that you think is useful from that time period that you learnt?
My tennis game got a lot better. That's for sure. No, I'd say, you know, don't waste your time, because I did waste a lot of my time, I think. Doesn't mean you've got to be spending your whole life going 100 miles an hour. doesn't mean that you have to feel bad about yourself if you haven't, you know, rediscovered yourself and had an epiphany that you want to be a school teacher or a rocket scientist or start your own business. You know, I thought about all those things and probably got a bit down on myself because I felt I was being so unimaginative that I couldn't, you know, as I say, start my own business, for example. You know, I could have had the capital behind me to do something new, but I just didn't have any ideas. And I think maybe it's just not me, but maybe I had a, you know, a successful career with someone else, you know, being able to, you know, run the shop and pay me a salary without having to run my own business. And suddenly, you know, thinking that I should suddenly become that person the wrong side of 50, it wasn't me. But look, as I say, you know, take the time you have out. I think always be optimistic that you are going to get back into employment if you want. So realize that the time you're having off, you know, don't waste it. I enjoy it and, you know, use it beneficially as well. So I'd say both those things.
Thank you. I mean, we've talked about your redundancy and how you were feeling throughout that time. I feel like I've learned a lot today as well that I didn't know. So thank you for sharing that with us. And thank you for being my first guest. I'm very excited that you're my first guest and that you were able to talk so eloquently about what happened. So thank you for that. No. And here's to many more years of a successful career.
Thank you very much. Well, look, I mean, it amazes me that anyone would have any interest, but if anyone happens to listen to, well, I'm sure they will, because it will be an enormously successful series. But if anyone can get, you know, any benefit from it, then it's a job well done.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Dynamics of Everyday Life. Please hit the follow button for future episodes and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow me on Instagram at The Dynamics of Everyday Life or find me on LinkedIn at Julia Rogers. I'd love to hear from you and hear your thoughts on dynamics. The Dynamics of Everyday Life is brought to you by Coaching 42 and the fabulous team at the Podcast Boutique.